Hello, I'm Lenore Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Infrastructure is essential in delivering healthcare to communities and individuals. Health infrastructure provides the capacity to prevent and treat diseases, prepare for health emergencies, and promote healthy living. Experts say a strong public health infrastructure includes adequate facility, a qualified staff, access, up-to-date data and technology. It must be effective, efficient, safe, timely, sustainable, and support equity and patient experience. A report by the African Development Bank reveals that the health infrastructure is unevenly distributed in sub-Saharan Africa and often of poor quality. And only half of the primary healthcare facilities on the continent have access to clean water and adequate sanitation. Let's go to Senegal, where a hospital fire took the lives of 11 babies, sparking outrage and anger.
A great tragedy has happened here at the Mame Abdou Aziz Sy Dabaka Hospital in the town of Tivune, Senegal. 11 new babies have died in a fire, leaving many in pain and disbelief. Nogayema lost her grandson in the fire.
The first signs that there was a fire were noticed around 9 p.m., but there were no hospital workers on site. The three guards were all downstairs. The first alert came from someone who had left to bring dinner for sick people. He said there was a smoke. It was when the building really caught fire that they managed to locate it. But when they came to the rescue, it was too late.
Tivune's mayor Demba Diop says preliminary investigation have revealed that a short circuit triggered the fire. He says all babies inside the room have been burned to a certain degree, and there are no survivors amongst the babies that were in the incubators. Mamadou Mbaye was on the hospital premises.
I ran over. I saw women crying and screaming. I then went to the second floor and the midwives were there. They were screaming and screaming. It was dark. There was a lot of smoke and it was extremely hot.
It is total negligence. If the people on duty were at their posts, we could have avoided this tragedy. It is time for the management of the hospital to be reviewed. Everyone complains about it, especially us, women, who give life.
The tragedy in Tivune is the latest in a series that has highlighted problems in Senegalese hospitals and health system. Last month, a pregnant woman died in agony after her appeals for a cesarean section at a public hospital in the northwestern town of Louga were denied.
Hospitals no longer care, no longer help, and no longer have compassion for the sick. Normally in hospitals, people have scheduled shifts that take turns caring for patients. But in this hospital, the staff gather in the break room to make tea, watch TV, and connect on WhatsApp, so they don't know what's going on.
President Macky Sall has fired his health minister, but for many Senegalese, that is not enough. Critics say concrete actions are needed to overcome gaps in national health infrastructure in Senegal, as well as other African countries.
We asked, what are your thoughts on the quality and safety of health facilities in your community, and what needs to be done to improve the infrastructure and services? Here are some reactions from Nairobi, Kenya.
I think for healthcare, despite the fact that healthcare is nowadays a devolved function, there's a lot of congestion because there are a lot of patients who are checking into these health facilities. So we need more resources deployed into these hospitals so that we don't have issues of cleanliness and congestion. When more resources are deployed, we'll be able to expand the wards and also hire more resources that are able to maintain the cleanliness in the health facilities.
The health facilities around my area, they have really improved according to what I've seen because of the cleanliness that has been brought up by the government. And the improvement that needs to be done is that so many people go to the hospital at the same time, but the doctors are still very few. So they need to improve on the number of doctors and nurses that are in our hospitals.
And for sure, our health services there is very poor. The drainage, the toilets, the dumping sites, so much things are going on and we are not getting help. It's a health hazard there. We hope the government is going to do something about whatever we are going through because we don't have any support.
Where I come from, the doctors have they do private jobs with their private hospitals, so they cannot do both. It's very hard for them to work in both public and their entities. So we are urging the government to bring more workers, more doctors, hire more doctors, so that people from all areas can get the services needed.
In our health facilities, they are good and their standards is very much okay, but we also need some improvement at our health facilities in case of outbreaks of the diseases. We need personnel to curb the diseases and also to avoid some issues like strikes of the nurses and other health workers. We also need some improvement and also the staff shortage in our health facilities.
The challenges that I'm seeing with our health facilities around here is a lack of equipment, and such that when people are suffering from various diseases and conditions, have to go to other places to have themselves treated. The improvements that I would want to see here would be at least at the sub-county level, to have one facility that can actually handle some of those conditions and have those equipment that can help the people around here so that they do not have to go all the way to the cities to have that happen.
For more insights about the challenges and opportunities of healthcare infrastructure in Africa, we spoke with Dr. Aminu Magashi Garba, coordinator for the Africa Health Budget Network, a network of organizations and individuals using budget advocacy to improve health service delivery in Africa.
The challenges are both sides. We need to upgrade. We also need to maintain. So that is one of the biggest challenges in Nigeria. You could see a governor, you could see a minister providing billions of naira to equip a hospital. Come back after 1 year or 2 years, the structure have collapsed, or they are obsolete, or they are not working at all. Because when you equip a facility with all the sophisticated gadgets, you need a stable electricity, you need security, you need maintenance, you need reagent. The upgrading is also very key. So, for example, any equipment we buy that could do prevention or diagnosis could cost us like $1 million. But after a while, you need to upgrade the equipment. Sometimes the money is not available. The person that procured the machine has already gone. The new governor would say, that's not my business. I didn't put it there. The government should not only provide the funding. The government should also provide the enabling environment for a private sector to also thrive. The civil society organizations in the world, the non-governmental, they're also private sector, but not for profit. We should allow them to also thrive and partner with the government into a public-private partnership. And also, government can provide the regulation and the oversight function. We have what we call the Nigeria Infrastructure Health Development Bank Bill, so that the health sector, for the first time in the history of Nigeria, there should be a bank for health that will also provide funding for infrastructure development. So one of the biggest challenges within the health facility is the maintenance culture. And when we talk about the maintenance culture, it is the health workers. It is the human resources within the facility that need to maintain equipment. If I come to the facility and it's not hygienic, or it's there's a poor sewage system, or there's a challenges within the maternity, before we look at the government, we have to look at the health workers. And the health workers is not only the workers. The professional bodies of that health workers have a role to play in providing advocacy, sensitization, engaging the government meaningfully to ensure that we maintain all our infrastructure and also we upgrade them to the level that they will provide quality health service for Nigerians.
That was Dr. Aminu Magashi Garba, coordinator for the Africa Health Budget Network. The Northern California Ethiopian healthcare professionals, in combination with the Ethiopian community in the region, established the Helpers in Northern California group, which aims, among other things, to restore health centers in war-affected regions of Ethiopia.
Healthcare is an immediate need. There are, mothers, children, that need attention. There are elders, many people with chronic medical conditions that would need their medications continued. So whether or not there is war, right, there is always need for providing health care. And unfortunately, you know, because of the war, these regions have lost almost everything, right? That included about 523 health centers. We collaborated with the Ministry of Health. We took responsibility to rebuild and restore 4 health centers. That's 4 of 525. We are able to collaborate with MedShare, which is a nonprofit organization here in America, as donating medical supplies and equipment to other countries in the world, including Ethiopia. So we were able to sponsor 2 40-foot ocean containers full of medical supplies and equipments that are going to these 4 health centers. We need all the help we need. It's not just financial help, ideas, support, any insight on how we can get this work done as a group. We still have a lot to do. I think we all were very energized and excited about helping our country. And that energy has slowed down for some reason. There is work to be done. So the more delayed our effort is, the more damage our people are going to be sustaining. But hopefully, you know, we will energize our community and other entities to get our work done, because I will tell you that we will not stop till we're done what we are supposed to do.
Fighting in Ukraine has badly damaged its medical infrastructure, with the World Health Organization reporting more than 250 separate attacks on health facilities and health personnel since the start of the Russian invasion. One U.S. firm is moving to help make up that shortfall with mobile laboratories. For VOA, Jenya Dulot has our story from Los Angeles.
Worksite Labs assembled its first portable laboratory to help improve rapid testing of the coronavirus. Oh, Gary Frazier.
You have the busiest jail in the United States, which is L.A. County, and they had this problem that everybody else had, is they needed to know within hours, not days, if someone was COVID positive or negative. And the only way to do it was for us to actually put put a laboratory inside of the parking lot of the jail.
From that first diagnostic kit in a shipping container, Worksite Labs has delivered portable laboratories to more than 20 locations across the United States, focusing on underserved communities. Partnering with a company that customizes shipping containers for healthcare, Worksite Labs is shipping 3 portable units to Ukraine to help with the country's humanitarian crisis. Chief Financial Officer Craig Beam says the laboratory container and 2 clinic containers have all been converted to European Union standards for electricity and plumbing.
Although we're founded around COVID testing, this equipment can be used for most normal testing. So a lot of it is blood testing. So you look at what people's blood values are, or it can also be used to see what kind of infection they may have. UTIs. Or other infections. So the equipment will be able to be used for more generic diagnostic.
In Ukraine, an Irish charity, the Gorto Group, will make sure the mobile units are delivered where they're needed the most, to help with medical testing, trauma response, and maternity care. The Gorto Group CEO, Ray Jordan.
We're going to be using them in the west of the country, primarily for the massive increase of the population that has moved from the east to the west. And then probably more importantly, and obviously it's huge regret, the amount of destruction that has taken place on health facilities inside in the country, and that these really essential health facilities, we will literally be able to bring them across the border, drop them into places, and that people will have effectively, you know, world-class facilities in places where, regrettably, some of their existing facilities have been completely destroyed.
With those units on the way, Worksite Labs is already planning to send more mobile clinics to Ukraine, where the World Health Organization says healthcare facilities are stretched to the breaking point. Jenya Dulo for VOA News, Los Angeles.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the GOP coalition of 10 senators supporting a framework proposal to respond to the mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas, is set to come under intense pressure in the weeks ahead to prevent a defection, which would defeat the long-sought deal. For this and more, join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me for a special edition of PCUSA with guest award-winning historian and author Jesse Holland as he takes us on the journey of how the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act was signed into law this year and will examine the legacy of Juneteenth, a celebration of freedom for many African Americans. Join me for PCUSA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. The Albanese Association of Nigeria is petitioning the government to resume free cancer treatment for albinos. The free treatment was stopped years ago because of a lack of funding. Experts say people with albinism are more likely to get skin cancer because they have little or no melanin. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
This rash on Cynthia Ukachi's skin can be deadly.
I have three on my neck. I have two at my back. And I just have this on my forehead here. It looks very small, but it's very painful and it can bleed.
Ukachi says sores are malignant skin cells capable of spreading and causing skin cancer that could be fatal. Ukachi says she first noticed the changes on her skin in 2018. She received treatment thanks to a government program that offered free skin cancer care for albinos. But now, she says her condition has returned and the government has ended its free treatment plan.
So noticing this issue again, I already know what it is, but I couldn't go back to the hospital knowing I'll be asked to pay. And the money is what I do not have. If the government wants me to leave, if the government wants persons with albinism to leave, they should reinstate the free cancer treatment.
Authorities started the program in 2007, and the Albinism Association of Nigeria says more than 5,000 patients, including Ukachi, benefited from it before it was discontinued. Jackie Epele is a skin cancer survivor and the group's president.
Even the current administration started a skeletal implementation at the beginning of their tenure, but then reneged. And the reason is simply that poverty of funds and the fact that they cannot continue to offer this treatment. And of course, the effect is that persons with albinism are dying in droves.
Medical experts say albinos are 1,000 times more likely than the general population to develop skin cancer due to the partial or complete absence of melanin, a pigment responsible for eye, hair, and skin color. In Nigeria, myths and discrimination associated with albinism make it far more difficult for those with the disorder to get jobs and afford skin cancer treatment. In May, the Albinism Association renewed its call for the government to reinstate the free skin cancer treatment. Nigerian authorities responded.
We had discussions with the permanent secretary of the Federal Ministry for Health for us to be able to revisit this. We're going to provide some funding support to do that. Additionally, by next year, we're going to provide proper budgetary allocation that will support this cancer treatment for our people.
The Albinism Association cautions there is no time to lose, as free treatment is the only lifeline for persons around the country like Ukachi, who fears she will run out of time. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Despite global efforts to curb plastic use, sub-Saharan Africa is predicted to see a six-fold increase by 2060, says the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. In South Africa, one man is trying to make a difference by creating jobs and transforming plastic waste into outdoor furniture and playgrounds. Linda Givetesh reports from Johannesburg.
It may look like timber, but these planks used for this dining set are made of recycled plastic. Hudson Tepofa started his business building with these planks at his home in the township of Katlehong after he lost his job during the coronavirus pandemic. He says it's created employment for himself and two other staff and contributes to environmental protection.
It is safe to do the recycling so that we can save our environment, because the animals, they won't die from those plastics and everything. Our dams, they won't be dirty. So I think that's the way to save our community.
The 34-year-old now gets regular orders for outdoor furniture and playgrounds. South Africa is one of the world's top countries for recycling plastic, capturing about 45% of plastic waste. This recycling plant makes durable and sustainable timber with plastics that are too low in quality to be reused for packaging or other materials. Recyclers say it's extending the lifespan of plastic used in everyday life.
When you wake up in the morning, you will touch or interact with plastic more than 100 times before you get into the office. And that's from turning on the light switch to your toothpaste. The problem we have with plastic is it's visible and it pollutes. Not plastic pollutes, people pollute.
The economic incentive for recycling plastic has given rise to an informal waste-picking industry. People gather and separate materials to sell to recyclers, providing them with income. But the informality of the business means waste-pickers don't have access to all neighborhoods or industrial areas, so the material ends up as litter or in landfills.
Because South Africa is such a disposing country, there's plastic everywhere for us to collect. There's no proper structures that fight against the redirecting of plastic from going to the environment.
Globally, 460 million metric tons of plastic are used annually, half of which are for packaging. That's set to triple by 2060, with a six-fold increase in sub-Saharan Africa, according to a new report by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And recycling is not keeping up, capturing only 9% of plastic waste globally, which is why environmentalists say reducing plastic consumption, especially non-essential packaging, is necessary.
In Africa, there's lack of financial capacity, human capacity to collect this waste efficiently. And so recycling is a problem. This needs to be looked at from businesses and government, because we need to change the default. And the normalization of just offering consumers plastic continuously.
Even with a reduction in plastic use, there would still be plenty of recycled material for creators like Tepofa to transform for new uses. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In India, millions of poor rural households moved to using cleaner energy in their kitchens after the government gave them subsidies to get cooking gas connections. But soaring fuel prices pose a challenge to the program that aimed at tackling the severe health challenges caused by indoor air pollution. Anjana Pasricha visited a village in North India and has this story.
After cooking for decades on a stove lit with firewood, women in North India's Sarmatla village were excited when they got cooking gas connections under a program subsidized by the government. But now the liquefied petroleum gas cylinders lie unused, as many return to cooking with wood.
Everything has become so expensive and I'm poor. As daily wagers, we barely earn $4. Tell me, should I buy food for children or buy gas?
For many homes, the $13 price tag for a gas cylinder after a series of hikes in the last year and a half has made it unaffordable as they grapple with high food prices and declining incomes due to the pandemic. Despite a $2.50 subsidy that the government recently gave rural households, it remains out of reach.
I only cook vegetables on gas. I make everything else on a wood fire.
It's a setback to the ambitious program, under which over 80 million rural households got cooking gas connections. The aim, to address problems caused by these smoky fumes.
Now, that indoor air pollution is equivalent to a person smoking significant number of cigarettes continuously at the same time. Now, broad estimates suggest that India loses 500,000 of its population every year prematurely because of this indoor air pollution.
These women live with those health consequences.
I cough, I get congestion and breathing problems. Then I try to cook on the gas stove.
With a wood stove, I get coughing spasms. I feel pain in my eyes and I get breathless.
It is not just poor households that have been hit. Even better off households in the village use cooking gas sparingly.
It is a huge challenge to cope with inflation and high cooking fuel prices. When I am told that it is time to refill the gas cylinder, I get really worried.
The number of households using clean energy rose from about 30% to 70% between 2011 and 2020. Those gains are now under threat.
At the very least, this has stalled the progress. At worst, this has reversed some of the progress. So unless the prices would get again attuned or get limited through either subsidy support or the decrease in global oil prices, we may see that households may not now shift towards LPG for most of their cooking.
That means there may be no early end to these women breathing these deadly fumes. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Sarmathla Village, North India.
The arrival of the COVID-19 pandemic intensified feelings of loneliness and social isolation for millions of older people, many of whom were already battling depression and other health issues. For those struggling, a robot companion might make a difference, and states like New York are starting to provide them to residents free of charge. VOA's Julie Talbot has more.
LAQ, can we have coffee?
I like that idea.
David Kelly is about to enjoy his morning coffee with LAQ, his robot companion.
Where in the virtual world do we want to go?
Paris.
Magnifique. Sit back and enjoy the sights and sounds.
Each morning, LAQ takes David on a virtual visit to a different cafe around the world. Just one of the perks of living with an assistive robot. It was a gift to David from his partner, Greg Allen.
I wasn't a really big fan at first, although he let me think he was.
When do you think you'll return?
Once I started interacting with her, it was like she was amazing.
With artificial intelligence, built-in sensors, and voice controls, LAQ is among a new class of robots that experts say are going to play an increasingly important role in the lives of older adults.
There simply haven't been robots that have been sophisticated enough to be ready to be used by real people. And we're finally seeing robots that are able to be deployed in the real world with real people.
LAQ.
In addition to coffee time, LAQ does a daily health assessment.
Can you tell me what blood glucose reading you got today?
176.
Got it. I'll jot it down.
LAQ also helps to keep David's mind sharp with brain teasers.
In Charlotte's Web, what type of animal is Charlotte?
A spider.
And inspirational words.
Thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
And images.
Tell me about this picture.
David says LAQ even provides some emotional comfort, reminding him of his sister who died 9 years ago.
LAQ came in and her voice reminds me of my sister. It just makes me feel good that, you know, it's that connection that I had with my sister.
Hey, Timmy, go to the office.
There are other assistive robots in the Allen Kelly household.
Hey, Jibo, how are you feeling today?
I'm on top of the world.
But none, they say, are quite like LAQ, who is programmed for empathy.
For an AI to truly help humans, it needs to project empathy. It needs to be on a journey with them. Our customers don't refer to LAQ as a device or as a product. They refer to LAQ as a companion, a roommate, a character or a presence in their lives.
Let's have some fun, David.
She has joined the two of us closer than we were before.
I can't imagine now being without her.
I'm glad we had this talk, David. I'm always here to listen.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more news and health coverage, visit voanews.com or voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Moudou in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day.